Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, and anything in between or outside of those lines, here we are. UFC 300 recap. Technical Knockout, Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. Thank you so much for joining. My name's Hussein. I'm your host. Here's my co-host, Jordan Patrick James. And we are talking about UFC 300. A fight card that was epic. A fight card that I got a lot wrong. And one that I'm excited to talk about regardless.
So lived up to its top. First off, shout out to Bloodsport MMA for coming on a couple weeks ago and talking UFC 300. Yes. Great episode between y'all two. But yeah, not the greatest for the TKO record books. I didn't get in on it, but dude, it delivered. I was very happy. How about you? What do you think of it?
Yeah, no, it certainly delivered. I mean, this is a card that even though I lost some money on, I had a lot of fun watching. So I very much enjoyed it. And, I think a lot of the bets that I went with my head instead of my heart. And this was one of the rare times where my heart would have been right. So it is what it is. But awesome fight card altogether. And, some surprising results, some not so surprising results in hindsight. Some fights that went longer than I thought they would. Some fights that went shorter than I thought we would. So let's break it down. Let's start at the top. Alex Pereira defended his belt against Jamahal Hill, the former light heavyweight champion who never lost his belt in the octagon, knocking him out in the first round, right? Yeah, it was only like 3 minutes into the first round.
What'd you think I was of that surprised fight, Jordan? That it was done that fast. I actually had Pereira as far as like my own personal betting slip. So I wasn't surprised to see him get it done and get it done by knockout, but I was very impressed with just like how surgical he was with it. You know what I mean? Like even that last little sequence of, waving Herb Dean off the cup check, being like, no, I got this. And then later on seeing the, the still shots of him stepping on Jamahal Hill's foot before he throws that left hook. It's like, man, that is it shows you like the levels of like chess this dude is playing in there in this game of MMA. So it was an awesome display of his fight IQ for me. So I'm very impressed with that one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, surgical is a perfect way of putting it. I think, I thought Jamahal Hill was going to get into some exchanges with Pereira and be able to land hard shots, but he really just couldn't get it going, it seemed like. He didn't do much of anything in this fight. Pereira came out, threw the leg kicks like we expected him to, got Jamahal to start to react to those, and then when Jamahal fired back that left body kick that went a little bit low, you saw what happened. Herb Dean tried to step in, or it's like, hold up, I got this. And he did get this, and he stepped in with that shovel hook, and like you said, stepped on the foot, which was a very savvy veteran move. You see it in kickboxing, time to time, it helps you get a knockdown. The difference is, in kickboxing, when you do get a knockdown, you can't jump on him and throw hammer shots, or hammer fists, rather. MMA certainly can, so Pereira was able to take full advantage of that. And not to say that the knockdown wasn't legit, because it certainly was. You saw in the slow-mo replay, Jamahal Hill's eyes like roll back in his head, and... I know after the fight, Jamahal, he took the loss pretty well. He said, like, I got caught. It happens. Like, you're fighting one of the best guys in the world and you get hit in the face. It happens. You know what I mean? So I was happy to see him take the loss graciously. I'm not happy to see him get lined up for another fight so quickly. If you didn't see the news, they're making the fight between him and Khalil Roundtree in 2 months. 2 months.
I mean,
he got knocked out. It wasn't like he got TKO. All right. I don't know, man. Khalil Roundtree's a scary.
I mean, it's not like he took a bunch of damage Hill. Up until that point. You know what I'm saying? No, I know. I know. Yeah, I mean,
true. It was a one.
It's
shot.
Up to him, dude. If he feels like he can get back in there, I think you're right. I think he probably should wait a little bit longer. But hey, it's
I mean, he's going to fight sooner than the guy that knocked him out.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not Pereira. Like, Pereira would fight tomorrow if he could. I don't understand. So, I mean, that's not.
Yeah, true. I think he said he broke his or tore his knee or something popped in his leg like 2 weeks before the fight, and now he has to.
Well, so speaking of prayer, where do you think he goes next? I could, and so I just want to say this now. I do think if he ever decided to move up to heavyweight, and he spent like 6 months just building his body to be a heavyweight, like, he would be a believable contender for me. Like, whether he ever got the belt, you know, that'd be questionable. But like, I could see him in there banging with some of them big boys as like a lean, you know, a little bit heavier. I don't know. Pereira is just a fucking monster, dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, the guy hits ridiculously hard. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily have a speed advantage so much these days at middleweight, or I mean, certainly not at middleweight. At light heavyweight, he has a bit of a speed advantage against, depending on who he's fighting. At heavyweight, he will certainly have a speed advantage. So that'd be an interesting addition to his game. Nobody at light heavy or at heavyweight kicks like he does, kicks the legs like he does, and, you know, moves like he does. That being said, if he runs into, you know, anybody that can wrestle, I mean, in any weight class, if he runs into anybody that can wrestle, I think he's going to have a lot of trouble. And that's only going to be exacerbated by the heavyweights. You know, imagine somebody like Curtis Blaydes or Tom Aspinall, or even somebody who's tough and gritty like Marcin Tybura, if he can get in a top position on Pereira, I think would do horrible things to him. So if he does go for heavyweight, I mean, I love the ambition. And, you know, I think him versus Aspinall will be an awesome fight. I think Aspinall runs through him, but I think it'd still be really interesting to see. At light heavyweight, there's not a ton for him to do right now. You know, Jiří just beat Rakic. We'll talk about that later, but he knocked out Jiří like, what, 6 months ago? And then, obviously, he just finished Jamahal Hill, and Jamahal Hill's getting that fight with Khalil Rountree, who would, I mean, you can make an argument that he could be the next step. The only other person would be Magomed Ankalaev.
I just saw that they don't, Pereira wants to fight a lot sooner than Ankalaev wants to, so he's passing on that one. So it's like, who realistically can you see beating Pereira at light heavyweight right now?
I mean, I think Ankalaev has a good chance of beating him just because of that wrestling game, but at the same time, Ankalaev,
he's chinny.
We've talked about it before on this podcast. The guy, he's chinny, and he falls in love with his hands. He wants to knock people out. Like, he has a lot of knockouts on his record, but he's a very talented wrestler that only goes to his wrestling whenever he has to, instead of using it to get ahead in the fight like he should. So if he fights Pereira, I'd pray that he'd go for the wrestling early, but I can't trust him to do that.
What about?
But regardless, that fight probably won't happen until Abu Dhabi in October, they said. So I think Pereira can get a fight before then.
He could fight Jan.
Jan Blachowicz, that'd be good, but, you know, did Blachowicz get a win since that fight?
When has that mattered?
I don't think he has. Yeah, good point. I mean, Chito Vera came off, got a title fight off of one.
Flyweight, come on, number 10 dude's fighting for the championship at, like, flyweight. Yeah, come on, dude.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think there's two fights to make right now. I mean, obviously the Magomed Ankalaev fight is there, but like you said, he wants to wait until Abu Dhabi in October, and Pereira doesn't want to do that. So in that time span from, you know, now April until October, he could either go up to heavyweight and fight Tom Aspinall, who's doing nothing because he's waiting for John Jones and Stipe to fight, which is probably never going to happen, or he can fight Jiří Prochazka again. Jiří did get that victory over the weekend, and Yuri's a crazy person who will come back and fight somebody in 2 months if he wants to. And I'm sure he wants to get that one back against Pereira. He was doing pretty good in that fight against Pereira before he got knocked out. But, you know, I don't know if there's much more he can do. The matchup is pretty tough for him, with given the leg kicks and everything. But, you know, if Pereira wants to stay busy, he can knock out Jiří again. But let's move on, because there's a lot more to talk about on this card. Either way, Pereira's in a pretty good spot here, defending the belt a couple times now. So we got Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. This fight was very interesting, very dramatic. It almost felt like a movie at some points, because, you know, I don't know if you experienced the same thing or not, Jordan, but, you know, Zhang Weili pretty much had Yan Xiaonan finished with that choke in the first or second round. I don't remember which one. And, you know, she was out. Like, the bell rang and she got up to her feet. She went to the corner and she was able to come back in the corner and win the next round. Is fucking crazy. Like, I mean, I don't know if it was the next round that she won, but She definitely, she almost got choked out. I think it was the first round. Second round, she came out and Weili beat her up on the ground again, but was not able to get to the same finishing positions. Maybe a little bit of an adrenaline dump or something after getting that almost finish. But then the third round, Yan Xiaonan was whipping her ass. She was landing side kicks, dropping her, dropped her with a couple punches. Fourth round, she dropped her again. And then fifth round, Weili, you know, turned it back around in the fourth and the fifth round, you know, towards the end of the fourth and the whole fifth round. She just, you know, beat up Yan Xiaonan on the ground where she could have and got that decision victory, you know. So for Weili, getting two victories in one night, pretty solid, you know. Proving why she's number one in the female pound for pound. Yan Xiaonan, I think she had a great showing regardless of if she lost or not. I think she looked good in the fight. She showed that her striking is, you know, not to be fucked with. And the grappling, she looked improved, although Weili has improved leaps and bounds in her grappling in her own right, so it wasn't enough. But, you know, she certainly looked better on the ground here than she did against Carla Esparza 2 years ago, or even Mackenzie Dern not that long ago when they went to a draw. So personally, I'm proud of Yan Xiaonan. Weili did her thing, but I like the show.
Yeah, I think if it was the grappling level of Weili a couple years ago, it would have been Yan would have been right in there. But you're right, Weili has improved so much just in all aspects as an MMA fighter that it's hard to contend with her. So Yan did a great job. And you know, I'm a huge Yan Xiaonan fan. That being said, I did think that Weili was still going to get it done, but I was very impressed with Yan's performance. I do think that she is the absolute future of that division and maybe of women's MMA once Weili retires or, you know, kind of moves on to the next stage. But Weili just showed, you know, why she is such a, you know, such a well-rounded athlete, such a well-rounded MMA fighter. So I liked it. I was really very happy. I wanted Yan to win, but I, you know, felt like she wasn't going to. So she put in the performance that I really wanted to see, even on that losing end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what
I don't
have.
Know who's next for Weili, honestly.
Who else?
I mean, I guess
is she got?
You could put Jessica Andrade in there, I suppose. You could put, you know, Tatiana Suarez for sure deserves a shot. I don't know if she's going to be able to make it to the fight. The girl gets injured every other month, it seems like, you know. And I think if she does stay healthy, I think that's a very interesting matchup for Weili. And it'd be interesting to see Weili in a fight where, you know, these last few fights for her, she's been the better grappler. And she's, you know, used that to her full potential in those matchups where she, you know, she really won with her wrestling. Against Tatiana Suarez, she's going to be the better striker. And, you know, Weili's an amazing striker. So I think it's a very good fight for her and a very interesting matchup. I think Tatiana Suarez is an interesting matchup for anybody. When you get a wrestler like this in a division like this where there's not a ton of very credentialed wrestlers, it's always interesting to see how they line up with the contenders and champions that you've seen for years. So I'd love to see the Suarez fight. I think it makes all the sense in the world considering that the division's kind of at a standstill right now. So hopefully they make that matchup. Hopefully we can see it by like summertime or, you know, maybe like September or so. And
what do you,
we'll see
what do you think about Weili moving up to flyweight for a run?
I mean, she could, but she's pretty small, man. She's pretty small at strawweight. You know, even Yan Xiaonan is bigger than her, and Yan Xiaonan's a very small strawweight. So I think she's good at strawweight for now. You know, maybe later in her career if she wants to, or if she wants to go up and fight for a double belt. I just feel like flyweight has a lot of contenders right now that are chomping at the bit. Minaf Fioro, Blanchfield, Nama Yunus. You know, Macy Barber, there's a few women there that are ready to go for that title shot. And I don't want to see both divisions go to a halt. You know what I mean? I'd like to stay away from the double champ stuff in the women's divisions, especially cause there's only three of them. You know what I mean? But yeah, that being said, I think Yan Xiaonan probably should fight somebody like, you know, Marina Rodriguez or, you know, Ariana Lipsky or something like, give her a bounce back fight. You know what I mean? Maybe give her Verna Jandaroba, who won a couple weeks ago against Lupi Godinez. I mean, Jandaroba deserves a step up. That's an interesting matchup because of the grappling for Xiaonan. So I like that fight. I think that'd be a good fight to make. All right. Now let's talk about the people's main event, the fight that everybody was looking forward to, the fight that Most
I could not
wrong,
have been more wrong on this
Max
one. Like, we were talking about this for like months about how this was going to be the fight that changed Holloway. Yeah. This was going to be the one that like finally puts his lights out, the one that like gets him the Tony Ferguson decline. And we were wrong from bell one to the last second. Holy fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn, man. Max
he's,
Holloway.
He's that he's dude. Him. He's literally he really that dude.
He fucking got it done, dude. And you know what it was? It wasn't even like, it wasn't a war. I mean, it was a war in the sense that it was an exciting fight, but it was one-way traffic, man. Holloway was beating the shit out of Gaethje the whole fight. And you know what it was that Gaethje, he fought smart. And that's what we thought he was supposed to do. You know what I mean? We all were like, if Gaethje fights a smart fight, if he doesn't get crazy, you know, picks his shots, it's going to look like the Tony Ferguson fight. It did not look like that. I think a big factor in this fight, and it can't be understated, I think, was that spinning back kick in the first or second round at the end of the round that completely shattered Gaethje's nose. After that, it was a whole different fight, you know? And, you know, it's not taken away from anybody. Max obviously threw that technique with intention. He was trying to go to the body, but Gaethje did that slip that he does and caught it, like, heel going up the nose like that, and it just, you know, wrecked his nose. Bleeding profusely, had to open up his mouth for the rest of the fight, and I think that really affected Gaethje's performance. The round that Gaethje did win, round four, was the one where he decided, fuck it, I'm not gonna do this, you know, technical strategic approach anymore, and I'm just gonna walk through these punches and I'm gonna hit him harder, which is what Gaethje did, you know, early in his career, up to like 2018 or whatever, whenever he got knocked out by Poirier and Alvarez back to back. And that's, you know, what got him a lot of the success and garnered him a lot of the attention that he has now is that kind of style. It's something that he hasn't done in a few years, and it won him the fourth round, but you saw how much damage he had to take in order to win that round. You know, he was able to get that knockdown on Holloway. The stats don't score it as an official knockdown, but we all know what we saw. He got hit in the face and put on his butt. That's a knockdown. So first knockdown scored against Max Holloway for Justin Gaethje, which, you know, I think we were expecting to see Gaethje land some good power, but that was for it to be the only moment of the fight for him was not what I was expecting. So all the credit to Max Holloway.
And then, like, well, let's not forget about the last 10 seconds of something that he did not have to do.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Like, you know, could have just danced around and be like, hey, good fight. But like, let's finish this, dude. Like that. Oh. Go well. What did he have to lose? That's like his best chance to win. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. So
that was his only chance.
It's like Holloway just he's just that. Literally just that dude. Like, oh my god,
that shit was crazy. I lost my mind, dude. I jumped up screaming at the TV. It was insane. Like, oh, that was like, I don't know, man. You know, we've been watching the sport for so long, and sometimes I do get a little desensitized to it. I feel like when crazy shit happens, sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, I've seen something like that before. That was not the case with this one. I got the goosebumps. I stood up screaming, and it reminds me why I love the sport so much. You know what I mean? So that was fucking sick, man. That last second knockout was crazy. I love how the UFC put it up on YouTube immediately too. I like when they do that. That shit was insane, dude. That's lightning in a bottle right there. You know what I mean? Yeah, Max Holloway deserves everything now. If he wants to fight Islam, sure. If he wants to fight Teporia, sure. I'd love either of those fights. I think the Teporia fight makes way more sense, but, you know, whatever he wants, give it to him.
Dude,
guy,
he's on fire, too. You know, he's on, like, some kind of, like, mythical quest.
Yeah, no, the guy's
he's blessed, possessed. Yeah.
He's blessed, you know? Yeah, for Gaethje, you know, take some time off. He said he doesn't want to retire. I thought that this would have been a good fight to retire on, but nobody wants to go out face planted in the middle of the canvas, you know? So, you know, for Gaethje, comeback fight, he could fight a lot of different people. Maybe fight one of these young up and hungry contenders again, somebody like Benoit St. Denis or, you know,
fight
one of those dudes.
Fight Conor McGregor next year at 185.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the winner of the Chandler Conor fight, you know? That'd be a good one. But, you know, I mean, honestly, dude, if they do that, when that fight happens, Conor versus Chandler, if Holloway does lose to Teporia, I think it makes a lot of sense to do the winner of that fight versus Holloway, you know? Why not? I think that'd be a good BMF fight.
It's the only, chance Connor's got to get a belt again, I think.
I mean, yeah, but I would pick Holloway pretty comfortably in that fight, especially seeing what he did to Justin Gaethje. Like, that was insane. But, you know, we'll see how Connor and Chandler look. Regardless of those two guys, though, Max Holloway put on a great fight. I mean, Justin Gaethje was all heart the whole time. I really feel like if that spinning back kick didn't happen, it would have been a different fight. But also, you know, if my aunt had a dick, she'd be my uncle. So, you know, we can't really talk about what could have happened or what didn't happen. It's a different fight than what happened. So going down the card now, you got another lightweight scrap here. Arman Tsarukyan versus Charles Oliveira. Split decision, which I thought was pretty interesting. You know, watching it live, I was like, if I wasn't really paying attention to this fight, I would say that maybe Charles Oliveira won. But watching the fight intently and, you know, very closely, you could see that Tsarukyan definitely won rounds 2 and 3. That dark choke that Oliveira landed in the end of the third was not locked in. You know, maybe it looked like it from certain angles, but, you know, Oliveira was hamming it up. Even he was, when he had it locked in, or, you know, when he had it set up, he was looking at the crowd like, and, you know, just, you know, playing it up for the cameras, which, of course, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You know what I mean? So good on Oliveira to fight his heart out. I would have loved to see two more rounds of this fight. I think that would have been very interesting. Yeah, I mean, it looked like Arman was starting to fade a little bit towards the end there. You know, we've seen him get tired in five-round fights before. So I think it would have been sick to see that fight for another two rounds. But the fight that we did get was very interesting. We saw a lot of very cool grappling exchanges. That guillotine that Charles almost got in the first couple of minutes had me shit in my pants. I really thought he was going to get it done there. But, you know, Tsarukyan stayed tough in there and used the ancient technique of breathing out of your asshole to survive that guillotine. We've seen it happen time and time again. Stephen Thompson versus Tyron Woodley, the Ortega versus Volkanovski, now Tsarukyan versus Oliveira, where guys just, you know, stays tough in a super tight guillotine. You're like, how the fuck did he make it through that, you know? So good on Tsarukyan there. And, you know, I think obviously the fight for him now is to make him fight for the title against Islam Makhachev. Unfortunately, he couldn't come back soon enough for Makhachev, so they're making Makhachev versus Poirier. But I think we all expect that fight to go a certain way. I mean, as much as a legend as Dustin Poirier is, it's a very hard stylistic matchup for him against Makhachev. So whenever they sort that out, Tsarukyan fighting the winner makes all the sense in the world. They'll probably do that in Abu Dhabi later this year. I think that makes sense. For Oliveira, what do you think, Jordan?
I don't know. It was hard seeing him lose. And we're in the and in 55, yeah, and it's guys like Poirier, you know, staying so tough. Guys like Gaethje staying so tough makes this 55-pound division so hard to talk about because, you know, we'd sit there and talk about them needing to take chances, needing to open up the gates, and they go ahead and do it, and they beat these guys back, and then we're in the same position. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we can't complain about it. So it's like, who realistically can we put him up against that he hasn't faced already, or that it would be like a good rematch? Because he's not fighting for the title. Gaethje's going to be out on the shelf. Yeah, yeah, I just saw that. That would be a good fight.
I think Gamrot would be a good fight. Yeah, I mean, I think Gamrot fights a very boring, maybe not boring, but a very risk-averse style. And Charles Oliveira is the opposite of that. Wait, so I think that would be an interesting matchup of, like, fire versus
ice. They have Max Holloway ranked number 9 in the lightweight division. What about Charles Oliveira?
That's crazy. About, he should have been lower.
Okay,
like
yeah,
three.
But I'm just saying he is now in the lightweight rankings. So what about Max Holloway versus Charles Oliveira?
I mean, I'd like to see that fight. It was supposed to happen years ago. I mean, it did. They got in the cage, but Oliveira had that torn esophagus. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
this.
I remember.
Like
he's breathing. He's breathing now. So
like 2016.
Let's get it popping.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a great fight to make for sure, like stylistically. But I think it just, you know, for Holloway, I think he deserves a title shot against either.
Well, Taporia he's not getting against Makhachev right now.
Like,
and then Taporia. Well, Taporia, I think you could see how I could see
Taporia. Yeah, he could fight
Taporia,
though. Yeah. 100%, yeah, and I think that's a very interesting matchup. I'd love to see how that one.
I wouldn't mind
out.
To see it. I wouldn't mind see it. I wouldn't mind seeing we'll that Oliveira Holloway fight before both of them hang it up.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a fight that can always be on the table. You know what I mean? Both of those guys have enough like pull and star power that you know we could see that fight when they're 40.
Yeah, I'd probably say Gamrot then. That's what we would probably go with.
Yeah. I think Gamrot's a good pick. And, you know, I could see Oliveira, Gamrot gets dropped and then dives for the legs, and Oliveira hits hard and drops people and then has a very wicked front headlock game. So I could see Oliveira definitely catching Gamrot something there, and I think it's a very interesting matchup. So I'd like to see that fight. I think it makes sense. For Gamrot, it's a good step up. Sarukian, wait for the title shot, man. There's nothing more to do right now, you know? He doesn't need to go and fight somebody like St. Denis or Poirier or Gaethje or anything like that. You already beat Chucky Olives. Like, there's not much more you can ask for to earn a title shot at lightweight. So, good for Sarukian. I'm really excited to see him fight Makhachev if that fight happens, because I think the grappling is going to be insane. They fought before and it was very close. So, you know, the world is your oyster, Arman Sarukian. Go for it. All go right. Forth, my friend.
Easiest fight.
So, next, we have Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. Yeah, easy fight to call. Not how I thought it would go down. Bo Nickel certainly had a lot more, or dealt with a lot more adversity or a lot more resistance than he's ever seen in the octagon or in any cage. Also saw his corner for the first time. Every fight he's had before this has been a first round finish. So for him to go to the second round is good experience, good learning experience for him. Brundage stayed tougher in this fight than I've ever seen him stay tough in any fight. He usually gives up pretty quickly. So good for Brundage to come out and, you know, show out, so to speak. Maybe didn't get a lot of success in the matchup, but definitely was a survivor and stayed tough in a lot of those positions that a lot of guys would have given up in or not had the prowess to survive. So good for him. For Bo Nickel, just keep doing what you're doing, man. You know what I mean? There's really not much to say about this fight. I think it's a good step up for Bo. You know, keep making him rise through the ranks. Maybe give him somebody like, I don't know, Cedric Dumas or, you know, Nursultan Ruzubayev, something like that. One of those guys. If you want to keep him on the coddled path, I like it. But, you know, he's calling for Fluffy Hernandez. I think that's insane. I think Fluffy Hernandez is probably like his worst matchup. I like the balls on him to call him out, though. So, you know, I think that's a good fight. But Fluffy right now is supposed to fight Roman Dolidze. So,
what
we'll
do you
that
think about his placement
we'll
on the
go.
UFC 300 card? Yeah. I know some people were a little upset. Some people didn't care. Like, what were you okay with it?
Well, you know, for me, I like to look at the other 100 cards to get a little bit of a sense of where he should be. I think having him on UFC 300 makes a ton of sense. You know, I think it's good to have a hot prospect on these big cards. In UFC 100, they had John Jones on the prelims. You know what I mean? UFC 200, they had a few different guys, but, you know, there's a lot more established names on that card than I think about it. But regardless, you know, to have him opening up the main card, maybe not the best decision, but at the same time, that gives all those champions that were on the prelims and the early prelims the chance to shine on national TV. So I kind of really love that. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it. I think if you are going to put him on the main card, having him as the first fight makes a ton of sense because, you know, putting him above somebody like Oliveira or something like that is crazy. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if it was me, I probably would have put him on the lower end of the prelims, maybe like, you know, after the Jim Miller fight or something like that. But
I mean, I was okay with it. You know, I mean, I'm obviously a wrestling fan already, so I have a bit more knowledge on him. But I think it's smart. I would have been okay seeing him on the prelims as well. But it was very cool to see him open up. And then again, like you said, when we get around to UFC 400, we're going to be talking about how, like, oh man, I remember when he was open up UFC 300. Now look at him now. That's a good point. We got to have, like, a lot of these dudes aren't going to be around to be on UFC 400. So it's nice to be able to have someone with that kind of continuity.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, solid performance there from Bo. Going down to the prelims now, and they were amazing stacked prelims. It was an awesome card altogether. So every fight has something to say. Yuri Prochazka versus Alexander Rakic. Woo. What a fight, man. That shit was awesome. I think, you know, on any other fight card, this fight would have got fight of the night. but you know, you had to compete with things like Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje and shit like that. So not an easy fight to draw that kind of award. But for Prochazka, an incredible comeback knockout. And you know, kind of what we come to expect from the guy. He gets beat up until he knocks you out. Rakic looked great. Rakic looked better than I've ever seen him, honestly. So I'm kind of gutted for him that he turned in such a good performance and still ended up on the wrong side of the knockout here. But that just speaks to the, you know, the depth of Jiří's heart and his game, to come back like that and to, you know, just kind of walk through those leg kicks and walk through those punches and hit Rakic much harder than he got hit himself. So good on Jiří. Sucks for Rakic. Rakic will come back. I'm sure he's still young. I think he's only like 31 or so. 32, yeah. And for Jiří, you know, probably puts him right there for a title shot now.
I think I want an anime based on Jiří Prochazka, honestly. That's what I want, where he's just standing outside an arena for 30 minutes, going in a monologue about his head, out of a montage. That's what I want. That's what I want in my life. But no, another awesome performance. I think you're right. I think the only you know, logical thing for him is to fight Pereira again for that title. You know, we were just talking about that earlier, how we don't really see him having any, you know, not legitimate, but like realistic people that could take the title off of him. And that's what we want to see. So I wouldn't mind seeing that matchup again.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jiří got caught in that match with those anti-wrestling elbows. I'd love to see, you know, a rematch, see how well studied he gets, if he can keep it on it. I would give Pereira the nod in the rematch anyway, but I still would be excited to see that, especially that stare down part two. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. No, that fight had me, you know, gave me chills, the lead up to it and everything. So, I mean, I'll tell you that much, soaking. I think that's a great fight to make. For Rakic, I don't know, man. I guess you can do the Blachowicz rematch. It makes sense. He got injured in that fight. You could do something like Jamahal Hill, but Jamahal Hill's fighting Rountree.
I still think they're going to give
Smith this upcoming weekend.
Pereira Plavovic is what I think. Yeah.
Huh? Pereira and Plavovic? You mean the heavyweight?
Yeah, Plavovic. Jan Plavovic against Pereira.
Wait.
Yeah, my bad.
Oh, Blachowicz.
I thought
you were saying Plavovic, yeah, like Sergey Plavovic, the dude that'd be a good matchup. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. The light heavyweight is in a pretty good spot right now with Pereira at the top. So that was an awesome fight, though. Then, you know, probably the least exciting fight on the card, but still a great showing. Aljamain Sterling versus Calvin Kattar. Sterling looked great at featherweight, man. I didn't think his style was going to translate up very well. I mean, obviously his grappling is very dominant, but I thought he was going to have a lot more trouble with the striking of Calvin Kattar than he did. And he was able to completely neutralize Kattar's game, by keeping Kattar on the back foot with his, you know, striking when it did go to the striking, by threatening the takedown constantly, had Kattar all sorts of information overloaded. And, you know, the highlight of the fight being that power bomb that he landed in the third round. That shit was fucking sick. But for the most part, just a consummate, steady, professional grappling performance from Aljamain Sterling, where he neutralized his opponent as best as he can. You know, that's kind of been Aljamain's game since he started, or not since he started, but since he's gotten to this higher level. Starting with that, like, Munoz fight, where he's either neutralizing your game with his grappling or overloading you with the striking and, you know, giving you too much to be able to react to. I remember the Jimmy Rivera fight's a good example of that kind of style. The Pedro Munoz fight, you know, obviously Corey Sandhagen, he ran right through him. So this is what Aljamain does. He makes good fighters look mediocre. He certainly did that against Calvin Kattar. No arguments here. 30-27 across the board. No controversy at all. And he sets him up. He sets himself up in a pretty good spot at featherweight
right now.
And you know, I think he said he wants to fight Brian Ortega. I think that fight is an interesting one that makes sense. While Topuria is busy with either Volkanovski or Max, Ortega's kind of, you know, sitting on his hands right now. So I think that fight's awesome to make. Emmett is a good one to make.
I don't know if that fight against Rodriguez
is good to make. I mean, it might not be a good matchup for Aljamain, but I think it'd be an interesting fight, you know? I don't want to, you know, the guy's a former champion. You can't give him easy fights, you know what I mean? I love Sterling, and, you know, seeing how he stepped up against Cater, I think he can certainly do that against Emmett. Emmett's somebody who maybe, I wouldn't say he doesn't not come back in fights. Like, he can come back in a fight for sure. He can knock somebody out at any moment, but he's somebody that can kind of let the fight overwhelm him. And that works well with Sterling's style of overloading his opponents, like we just talked about, where he's able to neutralize people like that. So I think it's a good matchup too for Sterling, because he might be bigger on the feet and be able to use some of that striking that we'd like to see from him, like he used against Munoz and Rivera. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good fights for him at featherweight, and I'm happy to see him get it back in the win column after getting knocked out against O'Malley. So good win there for Sterling. For Cater, I really have no idea what the fuck to do with him. I feel bad for the guy, because, you know, I feel like the whole New England cartel has been kind of in a bad spell lately, with Rob Font and Cater and Matthews and a few other guys coming up short in their last few fights. So I'm not sure what to do with Cater at this point. You know, there's a lot of fights he could have. He could fight Diego Lopez or Sadiq Youssef, some one of these kind of guys, one of these young, hungry up-and-comers at the bottom of the division, kind of defend his spot, so to speak. I think that'd be interesting. If he wants to go up to lightweight, that might be cool, too. I don't know. Maybe it's the weight cut getting to him at this point, at the age, you know. But it is what it is. We'll see what happens. But for Sterling, did everything he needed to do and got that victory, and pretty cool highlight with the power bomb as well. Next, we have Kayla Harrison against Holly Holm, and holy shit, was I wrong? God damn. Hey, Kayla Harrison looked so good on the scale and looked so good in the fight. She's
Raquel
massive.
Pennington might want to go ahead and give her that belt.
Yeah, no, I heard after the fight, Raquel Pennington said she's injured. She can't fight. So it was like,
how convenient.
That makes sense. Like, I'd say the same thing. So I don't know if they make that fight this year, I hope. If not, you know, put Harrison against Pena and have her just wash out these girls that, you know, have been waiting at the top of the division. Oh, I'd love to see that. Oh, I hate Juliana Pena so much. But, you know, I think, honestly, I'd pick her against anybody in the top five, in the top ten at women's bantamweight. So I really feel like this division is hers to rule. She's not terribly old. She's only 33, so
yeah, but she's like,
she has time.
She's like 45
and,
in PED years.
I think that's true. She's fucking juiced up, man. And, you know, good for her. Yeah, as soon as they got rid of USADA, they were like, yeah, let's get Kayla Harrison in here. I think it's a good fit. Get her down to 135. Dear God. I can't believe she made it. And she looked good too. I don't know what kind of shit she was pumping in her body to get down to that weight class. But I'm all for it, man. Let's do it. So her against Pennington is a very squash match, honestly. But Pennington is all heart, man, and you never know. You know, Larissa Pacheco was able to out-grit Kayla Harrison not that long ago. If Pennington can survive and it goes to the third, fourth, fifth, I think that's an interesting fight, honestly. Call me crazy. Pennington has pretty good boxing. She's pretty tough. So, you know, it might be a better fight than people think. Or it could be one-way traffic and Kayla.
Maybe we see maybe that's what gets Nunez out of retirement.
But regardless, that'd be awesome. That'd be really awesome. I saw her post a video of her like looking at the screen, like,
don't
say my name type shit.
Yeah, don't tease me.
Yeah, don't tease me. Don't honey dick me. But yeah, if Nunez does come back, you know, maybe after Kayla Harrison gets the belt or whatever.
I do too. Yeah,
I think that's an awesome fight, and I
well,
really
especially
like
with like after
fight.
Like such a long, not even like, a layoff, just like a break. How often do we see, you know, champions that have been, you know, noticeably battle worn take some time off, come back, and oh shit, they look really good. Yeah.
Yeah, or even better. You know, like, I mean, obviously the glaring example for me is GSP. John Jones as well, though. Henry Cejudo, even when he came back, looked really good. I mean, he didn't win, but he looked good in that fight, you know? So there's a lot of guys that have that example, and hopefully Nunez can
join
the ranks.
Even,
but
even
not,
you know, just kind of what you're saying about it's about to be Kayla Harrison's rule. Like, that's what Nunez was doing for the longest time. They had that fluke. I don't even call it fluke. You know, she got caught by Pena, and then got it back. And it's like, okay, she probably could, yeah, she could have kept on going. It now there's someone that it's like, okay, we could realistically see, you know, Nunez sit there and like banging out for five rounds at 135. So that would be cool.
That would be sick. I think the division is exciting now for the first time in a while, and that's, you know, what more can you ask for? So then you have Diego Lopez spazzing out and knocking out Sadiq Youssef in a minute and a half. Fucking awesome. I mean, what more can you ask for? This guy's a quickly becoming a favorite, a fan favorite, and an amazing fighter, Diego Lopez. Technically, this fight was everything that, you know, maybe in when you're watching in real time, you're like, oh, this is just like a sloppy brawl, whatever. Like, but it's a very legitimate technique to, you know, go for uppercuts and hooks in the single collar tie or in the clinch like that. You know, we've seen a lot of guys get knocked out in that position. You know, we've seen a lot of fighters use that to work their way through a fight or to come back in a fight. I mean, you know, the example that's coming to my mind right now is Henry Cejudo versus Mal Moraes, just, you know, dogging that clinch against Mal Moraes in a fight that he was getting beat up in. Most recently, Robbie Lawler versus Nico Price. Nico Price goes for that double under, or rather double collar tie. And whenever you do that, it's a good position to, you know, control the other guy, but your hands are on his head. They're not on yours. So homeboy can just kind of like boom, 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 boom. And there's nothing really you can do about that other than, you know, take those shots or go for a takedown. And Sadiq Youssef chose the former and just kind of got knocked out. So good on Diego Lopez. He obviously hits really fucking hard and is also really good on the ground. So I think very exciting prospect at featherweight. I'd like to see him versus Cater. I think that's a good fight to make. If not, you know, another one of those top 10 guys would make a lot of sense for me right now. Maybe Barboza. I don't want to see Barboza get beat up like that.
That's when Barboza, you know, does his best work.
Maybe Cater or Emmett or something like that. It would be a very interesting matchup. Jesus Christ, man. That comeback against Sadiq Youssef was insane. That was my comeback of the year for sure. That shit was insane. Excuse me. But yeah, so Diego Lopez, the world is your oyster, man. Do whatever you want. We're not upset to see you do anything because he's fucking exciting and a breath of fresh air in the UFC as a whole and certainly in the featherweight division. So
I got this one wrong.
Next.
Yeah, I got this one wrong.
Fumble of the century.
Yeah, I thought Turner was going to get it done.
Yeah. What, you picked Turner, right? I did too. I thought Turner was going to knock him out in the first round. And oh, wait, he did. Oh, but then he didn't finish the fight. Yeah, that's what happened. Jalen Turner dropped Moicano bad, like a sack of potatoes. And instead of hitting him with just one more punch, decided to be cool and do a walk-off KO. And then argue with the ref. While Moicano was actively,
yeah, like, why are you talking
like,
to me? He's about
fight.
To fucking
clearly
hit you.
He shouldn't have. He was still there. He was fighting. Yeah, and then he gets the takedown, and then it was just like, oh man, now Jalen Turner's on his back, and yeah, it was bad, man. It was
Jalen
really,
Turner. Three words.
Imagine that.
Do your job.
You know what I mean? He's probably sitting there like, what the fuck? What was I thinking? Ah, come on. I feel bad for the guy because I'm
chasing
sure
that, chasing
probably
that chin
chasing
is
that
what I'm talking about.
And you know, I think like the lead up to the fight. Yeah, and he caught him too, man. And you know, me and Bloodsport talked about the fight before, and we said like if Turner hits him, he's gonna drop him. Turner hits hard; he knocks down everybody he hits. And Moicano's been rocked and dropped a lot lately, you know. But if Moicano gets on top, Turner sucks on the bottom, and Moicano's really strong on top. So it was really a fire meets fire fight, and a fight that really couldn't have gone wrong either way. Like it could have went terribly for either fighter, and it did. But you know, it was a fight that was going to be exciting regardless of the outcome. I personally bet on the fight to not go the distance, so I made money regardless. But I also had Turner by finish in the first round and by finish in general. So that was a heartbreaker. But I love Moicano, and I'm happy to see him get that victory. And holy shit, his post-fight interview was fucking hilarious. It was amazing. And anytime he gets on the mic, I'm just so excited, you know. I was watching the fights with my friends, and, you know, a couple of them had heard of Moicano before because that Moicano wants money speech. And whenever the fight was finished, I was like, we have to shut up and listen to this man because he's going to spit some fire right now. And he certainly did. So good for Moicano. I love him. I love to see him get those dubs. For Turner, it really sucks, man, because he had the fight in his pocket and threw it away. But it is what it is. He'll come back and fight somebody good, probably like a Drew Dober or something, and that'd be a really interesting matchup. So maybe fight Nasrat Haqparast or something like that. You know, a little bit of a step down, but he can definitely get a dub against one of those unranked guys for sure. For Moicano, ranked now at lightweight, I'm not really sure where he goes from here. You know, there's a lot of fights to make in that top 10. He said he wants to fight Paddy Pimblett. That's an easy matchup for him. Dan Hooker is a good fight for him too. Another thing that I really love about Moicano is how honest he is. The rankings came out and we talked about it earlier. They put Max Holloway at number 9. They put Moicano at number 8. And he put a tweet out like, what the fuck is this? Max Holloway is ranked 1 below me. He'd kick my ass. Like, he's like, I don't want that fight. I saw an interview where they were asking him, they were talking to him. It was on the Jackson podcast with Rampage Jackson and stuff. And they were asking him about, you know, fights that he could take right now. He said, Paddy Pimblett, easy money. Dan Hooker, easy money. and the host goes, what about Charles Oliveira? He said, not so easy. So I like the honesty from Moicano, and honestly, he's one of my favorite characters in the sport right now. So the game is his. Give him some time to come back from that, because he did get buzzed in that fight. Give him some time to come back, and we'll see him in there against a top 10 fighter for sure. Yeah. So going down the card again, you got Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. This was a fight that I was very excited for. Both are action fighters in this weight class, and I thought it was a pretty good fight, man. Andrade did her thing. She landed the heavier punches. She landed the takedowns. She was able to, you know, just overwhelm and outwork Marina Rodriguez. I thought the split decision was insane. I thought it was for sure Andrade's fight, 2-1, maybe 3-0. But, you know, one of the judges had it for Marina. It is what it is. Marina even looked surprised when they said that. She was looking at her hand like, huh? Like, what? But, you know, the right woman won in the end of the day, and Jessica Andrade gets back in the win column again.
No, I was happy to see Andrade won. I think Rodriguez probably could have done more to get it done. I think she had clear paths to the victory. She just didn't seem to commit to any one game plan. But I wasn't too mad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seemed to me like she was winning moments of the fight, or minutes of the fight, rather, and then Andrade would hit her with a big shot, and she was like, oh, fuck, that's right. Like, I'm fighting a fucking rock golem. Like, so that certainly dissuaded her a bit. But, you know, Andrade is a monster, so I'm happy to see her get that dub. And for her to be on UFC 300 is sick, because she's one of those fighters who have been in the sport forever, who's turned in amazing fights in the UFC. You know, I remember seeing her fight in pre-Reebok era, so... kind of a good heartwarming moment for me for her to get a victory on UFC 300.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see her again the dub there. A fight that was not so fun to watch. Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. Scorecards were all over the place with this. 30-25, 29-26, 30-27. I personally had it 29-27. I thought Jim Miller won the first round and then lost the third round with a 10-8. Bobby Green definitely won the second round as well. So, I mean, Miller came out really well, like he usually does, and drops Bobby twice. I thought he was going to be able to get the finish in the first round, but it did not turn out that way. Bobby was able to recover very quickly, and it quickly devolved into the Bobby Green show, where he just moves around faster than the other guy, is way slicker than the other guy, and lands a lot of punches, and talks a lot of shit the whole time. And, you know, for Miller, it's tough, man. He had a few good moments in this fight, but for the most part, he just absorbed a ton of damage.
You know what?
He could have gotten finished in that last.
Yeah, you know, at least he got to go the distance, got to wear the crimson mask for UFC 300, you know, for the camera and everything. So that's, if you're not going to win, that's a hell of a way to, you know, to turn in another, you know, centennial performance.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Miller's a legend of the sport, man. And I mean, so is Bobby Green. So I'm happy to see these two guys get a spot on UFC 300. And the fight was pretty exciting. Could have been a finish for sure for Bobby Green. But, you know, Jim Miller's an absolute dog. So I'm happy to see him tough it out. And, you know, I would love to see him get a victory. But it is what it is. Bobby Green, great comeback after getting knocked out so bad by Jalen Turner like 3 months ago. So good job on him to come back and get in the winning column. Neither of these guys are going to be sniffing a title anytime soon, but both of them are tons of fun to watch. So, you know, whatever their next fight is, I'm going to be watching it regardless. And then Davison Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah, I know. That's why, it's heartbreaking to see him get choked out.
Cody Garbrandt looked good. He looked really good. Yeah, I mean, Figueiredo is a beast, and he's a very well-rounded fighter. He hits really hard. He has a great grappling game. And, you know, if anything, the knock on him has been he's a little bit foot slow. And Cody Garbrandt took complete advantage of that in that first round, man. He was moving and dicing him, landing jabs, sticking out, throwing the leg kick, throwing the teep, throwing that weird over-the-top crescent kick that he likes. Figueiredo almost caught him with a head kick when he went for one of those, which I thought was fucking a great read. But it wasn't the striking that got it done for Figgy in this fight. It was his grappling. And that second round, he came out and wrestled hard and was able to just kind of outpower Cody Garbrandt, which is not something that we've seen Garbrandt lose that way. You know, it's been a while since he lost. I can't remember any time that he lost a grappling fight. So good on Figueiredo to get that dub like that. And when he did get to the back, it was kind of just a matter of time. He was just very patient, methodical in his jiu-jitsu. Reminded me of like Antonio Carlos Jr. Shoeface, who's now fighting the PFL, but has that kind of like very steady jiu-jitsu game where I'm not overcommitting to anything. I'm just going to stay in the right position. And if you give me a chance for a submission, I'm going to snap it up, you know? And that's exactly what Figueiredo did. Very similar to, like I just said, Shoeface or Talis Latis or, you know, any of the Hanayaya, any of these old school Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys who have just a very slow, methodical pace. Even somebody like Anthony Smith, I think, is a good shout out in that regard. So good job for Davison Figueiredo there to sort of come back in that fight. In a fight that, you know, I think he was like a minus 400 in, and a lot of people expected him to smoke Cody early. He was able to fight through some adversity and get that dub. So I'm happy for Figueiredo. I'm happy for Garbrandt to be able to turn in a good performance there, even though he lost. I think his stock goes up after this fight. And believe it or not, I am excited to see Cody Garbrandt's next fight because it seems like he still has some gas in the tank, man. So we'll see what happens. For Figueiredo, I think you give him a top 15 guy now. I mean, he beat Rob Font in his debut. That should have warranted a top 10 fight there, but it is what it is. So, you know, for Figgy, definitely
that would be a good
move
fight.
Him up the rankings. If he fights somebody like Song Yadong or something like that, I think that'd be fucking sick. Yeah, but we'll see what the UFC does with him. There's, you know, a lot of good problems to have here with Figueiredo at bantamweight. So that wraps up UFC 300, man. It was a fucking kick-ass card. I had a really good time watching it. I had a great time discussing it with you, Jordan, and discussing it earlier with Bloodsport. Thank you very much for watching. It's been a pleasure discussing UFC 300, and it was a pleasure watching it. So we are going to come back very soon with a breakdown of next week's card, Mateus Nicolau versus Alex Perez, a fight card that has a lot of sleeper fights on it. But in the
follow
meantime,
us on Instagram.
Thank you so much for staying tuned, and y'all have a blessed day. Take
Spotify.
It easy. Appreciate
the Spotify,
you.
The everything.
Peace out. Yeah, the Instagram, the YouTube, all of those things. Hit us up, TKO MMA Podcast. Peace out.